Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federalist Society's Religious Liberties Practice Group, was recorded on Wednesday, February 14, 2018, during a live teleforum conference call held exclusively for Federalist Society members.
Welcome to the Federalist Society's teleforum conference call. This afternoon, we'll be discussing Myrick v. Warren, a case recently decided in federal court concerning gay marriage conscience protections. My name is Laura Flint. I'm the Deputy Director of Practice Groups here at the Federalist Society. As always, please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the expert on today's call. Today we are happy to have with us Stephanie Barclay, Legal Counsel at the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty. After remarks from Stephanie, we'll go to audience question and answer. Thank you for speaking with us. The floor is yours.
Thanks to FedSAC for having me, and I'm looking forward to talking to you all today about a little-known case that just concluded that may have big implications for the important national dialogue about conflicts between faith and sexual identity. In Myrick v. Warren, a federal judge recently ruled that the state of North Carolina violated the federal civil rights laws when it forced a magistrate named Gail Myrick to resign because of her religious beliefs about marriage. This ruling comes ahead of the Supreme Court's decision in Masterpiece Cake's Trust. Both Myrick and Masterpiece raise important questions about conscience and LGBT rights. I'll dive into the facts of the Myrick case in just a moment, but first I wanted to touch on an important macro point in many of these cases. Faith and sexual orientation are deeply important to the identity of many people. Some argue that LGBT rights and religious liberties are at odds with each other, locked in a zero-sum game. Underlying this argument by some critics of religious liberty is the idea that people of faith are asking for special treatment, privileges that others in society don't get, and in providing them with special treatment, society would necessarily be taking away other rights, like LGBT rights. What the Myrick case and other cases in this area demonstrate, including Masterpiece, is that often people of faith are simply asking to be given the same protections as everyone else in an even-handed way, and to not be singled out for disfavored treatment. When religious individuals are given the same protection as others, it is often easy to discover reasonable solutions that protect the dignity of everyone in our diverse society. So now for a little more discussion about Gail's case in particular. Gail Myrick was a highly qualified and well-respected magistrate in North Carolina who always receives top performance reviews. As a state magistrate, she issued warrants, set bail, and a very small portion of her work included performing civil marriage ceremonies. When same-sex marriage became legal, Gail didn't want to stop anyone from getting married. She also knew that her religious beliefs prevented her from personally performing same-sex wedding ceremonies. Since handling weddings was such a small part of her job, she hoped there was a way to keep her job without violating her convictions. Gail's immediate supervisor proposed a simple solution. They would simply shift Gail's schedule by a couple of hours. She wasn't even working during the times that marriage ceremonies were performed in the county. Gail's office let other magistrates shift their schedules around all the time for lots of reasons. And Gail's coworkers were happy to cover for her as Gail had done for them on many occasions. This solution would allow everyone to get married without any delay or embarrassment, and Gail could keep the job that she loved. But the state government rejected this solution and forced Gail to choose her faith or her job. She was threatened with civil penalties and even criminal prosecution if she wasn't willing to violate her faith. Faced with this choice, she was forced to resign, losing her retirement and her job. Recently, a federal judge ruled that the state government broke the law when it refused to let Gail change her schedule. The state government also acknowledged after that ruling that it had treated Gail unfairly and recently entered into a substantial settlement to make Gail whole, giving back the pay and retirement benefits that were unjustly taken from her. The state also passed the law, making sure that no magistrate would be targeted for their religious beliefs and no one would be denied a prompt marriage. This case demonstrates that there are reasonable solutions that can protect the dignity of both sides. Another recent Beckett victory addresses the same question of giving people of faith the same treatment as everyone else, even if their religious beliefs about marriage are unpopular. The University of Iowa lets lots of student groups require their leaders to support their mission, fraternities, sororities, Muslim groups, feminist organizations, the Korean American organization, and the LGBT Love Works organizations, and even other Christian organizations. But they wouldn't let a student group called Blink elect leaders who adhere to a traditional belief about sexuality. On January 23rd, the court in that case ruled in favor of Blink, reinstating that student group on campus and giving the university 90 days to either apply its policy as written in an even-handed way or to allow student groups to select leaders who embrace their mission and let Blink stay on campus. A similar principle of even-handed treatment is at issue in Masterpiece. Americans make decisions all the time about the types of messages or events they're going to support with their talent, their dollars, and even their businesses. The New York Times recently described the growing, quote, moral voice of corporate America, end quote, after a wave of companies, including Google, Airbnb, Uber, and PayPal, severed ties with white supremacist groups in response to the riots in Charlottesville. This phenomenon is not new, nor is it limited to opposing white supremacy. For years, Pfizer has refused to sell some of its drugs to state prisons because the company didn't want to use those drugs for capital punishment. Chipotle refused to cater a Boy Scouts jamboree because of the Scouts' then policy about gay Scout leaders. A coffee shop owner in Seattle recently refused to serve a group of pro-life activists, ejecting them from the store. Some time ago, a hairstylist in New Mexico decided that he was no longer willing to style the hair of the governor because of a position she took that was not supportive of LGBT rights. These business owners all made moral choices about a message or an event they were going to support. A similar moral choice is at the heart of the case in Masterpiece Cake Shop, which is currently pending before the Supreme Court. The store's owner, Jack Phillips, is a baker who's willing to sell any items off the shelf in his store to anyone, no questions asked. But what he's asking is not to be compelled to use his artistic talent to create a custom-designed wedding cake celebrating an event contrary to his deeply held beliefs. This is a standard that Jack applies across the board. He doesn't, for example, create custom work that celebrates Halloween, divorce, profanity, or racism. Jack is not the first baker in Colorado who objected to using his talents to support something he disagreed with, but he was the first one to be punished for it. Other Colorado bakeries refused to create a Bible-themed cake that condemned homosexuality, but in those cases, Colorado upheld those bakers' rights, explaining that they shouldn't be forced to create a cake they disagreed with. The state even said that bakers have the right to decline to bake a cake for the Aryan Nation Church or a cake denigrating the Quran. This double standard was the cause of concern for multiple Supreme Court justices during the recent oral argument in Phillips' case. Justice Alito called it disturbing that a baker could refuse to create a cake with a message that it opposed to same-sex marriage, but when the tables are turned, Phillips was compelled to create a cake that expressed approval of same-sex marriage. Justice Kennedy suggested that Colorado officials demonstrated a significant aspect of hostility to religion, and ironically that the state had been neither tolerant or respectful of Jack Phillips' religious belief. So all of these cases, and Myricks in particular with this recent conclusion of the case, highlight ways in which in our diverse society there are reasonable solutions that can protect dignity of both LGBT individuals and religious individuals, particularly when we work to ensure that people of faith aren't being singled out for disfavored treatment or being refused other accommodations and privileges that are normally offered simply because those people of faith have unpopular beliefs about marriage. The point of our civil rights laws and constitutional protections are to protect those who have unpopular views and to ensure that protections are offered, at the very least, in an even-handed manner. Thanks. I'd be happy to take questions.
Let's go to questions from the audience. In a moment, you'll hear a prompt indicating that the floor mode has been turned on. After that, to request the floor, enter star, then the pound key. When we get to your request, you will hear a prompt, and then you may ask your question. We'll answer questions in the order in which they are received. Again, to ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. While we wait for that first question, I'll ask one of my own. What does the settlement look like in this case?
Gail was forced to resign just a couple months before her retirement benefits would have vested. And the settlement that the state entered in this case gave back to Gail all of the back pay and front pay that was unjustly taken away, as well as her retirement benefits and other fees.
Again, to ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. Make a brief announcement. Our next Teleforum conference call is scheduled for Friday, February 16th. That call will be on new developments in Wisconsin's John Doe investigations and will feature Mr. Edward D. Greems, partner at Graves Garrett. Again, to ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. Stephanie, can you elaborate on how the solution to the Myra Cake case would work so LGBT people can still get married?
Sure. So in Gail's case, magistrates were on staff and on call 24 hours a day, and they worked in different shifts. Marriages were only performed during set times during the day, limited times that people had to make an appointment for in advance. And Gail's immediate supervisor was simply saying, hey, we can find a solution that just shifts the time that you're working just a little bit, and you won't even be working during the set times that marriages are performed at all. Performing marriage ceremonies was also a very small percentage of the work that magistrates performed anyway. In this way, Gail would have been able to keep her job, and the state would have ensured that government services continue uninterrupted and that no couple who came to obtain marriage services would face any delay or embarrassment or rejection. And in that way, the dignity of any couple who came would be protected, and there's a reasonable accommodation that would protect Gail's ability to continue working consistent with her convictions and her faith.
Let's go to our first audience question.
Hello, this is Ed Murphy. I'm an attorney in Chicago. And I was curious about what would have been the situation in North Carolina if this magistrate had not been close to retirement. In other words, would she have gotten her job back? It just seems like the remedy fit her situation, but what if she wanted her job back?
That's a good question. The federal judge in this case said that Gail was entitled to get her job back or payback to compensate her for not having her job, and then gave the parties an opportunity to decide what would be best. So I think if you did have a situation where you had a magistrate that wasn't close to retirement who wanted his or her job back, that certainly was something that the federal judge in this case thought was a fitting remedy that could be explored. I think that could possibly be true elsewhere as well.
And just to follow up on that, now, was this decision based on North Carolina statutes, or were there constitutional arguments? What was the legal basis?
The legal basis for this decision was under the Civil Rights Act, particularly Title VII protections. And what the Title VII framework says is that if a protected category, which includes someone for their faith, if someone needs an accommodation in order to keep working, then employers are obligated to try and find a reasonable accommodation and to explore ways to let people of diverse backgrounds keep contributing and still be able to meet their other needs of whatever their diverse backgrounds are. So, for example, under Title VII, we do this sort of accommodation all the time for other religious groups, like if a Muslim individual needs to also receive a scheduling accommodation so that they can have prayer breaks. That's a common type of accommodation under Title VII. But we also do this for non-religious reasons. We do this for people with disabilities, or if a new parent needs to shift their schedule around. We have accommodated government workers who are pacifists and didn't want to, in the post office, have to process draft cards. We have accommodated government workers who are philosophically vegan and didn't want to hand out flyers promoting meat products. And, of course, there are longstanding accommodations for government workers and other workers who have objections to participating in things like the death penalty or abortion. So this principle that employers have to work to accommodate employees is a good thing for our society, that it allows people of all different sorts of backgrounds to contribute and to make our workforce a diverse place. And in Gail's case, the judge was saying, not only are those sorts of reasonable solutions good, but an employer is required by law to explore them. And here, because the state government failed to do so, it violated the civil rights laws.
I see. That's a very thorough explanation. Thank you. Is there any appeal from, has there been, or is an appeal from this ruling expected?
No, because after the federal judge ruled in Gail's favor, the parties entered into settlement discussions, and that settlement has been entered into. It is final, and the EEOC case was dismissed. And this is a final resolution and victory for Gail Myrick.
Yes, I guess you did say that before. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Great questions.
Again, to ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. Our lines are wide open. Reminder to keep an eye out for emails announcing upcoming telephone calls and to consult the full schedule of our upcoming calls on the Federalist Society's website, fedsoc.org. Also available there are podcasts of previously recorded teleform calls you may have missed. Let's go to our next audience question.
Hello, this is Andrew Brown in North Carolina. And I was wondering, it seems like the situation here, there was a reasonable accommodation available for the magistrate, because this case seems to be a little bit different than Master Keith in that this is a government employee. But is there a situation where there's maybe not a reasonable accommodation available, and when different rights are pitted against one another? Any thoughts on how that'll work out in the future? Thank you.
That's also bringing up an important issue. So this is, as Andrew was touching on, a case where it's decided under civil rights acts that require employers to make accommodations, and real quick about that legal framework, employers are required to sort of explore within the context of that particular office and those particular circumstances whether an accommodation will be reasonable. And those are always fact-specific inquiries that look at the particular context and circumstances of the individual who's requesting an accommodation in that case. Masterpiece is raising, even though similar principles, they're raising different legal arguments, different legal grounds for decision. Masterpiece primarily is raising a First Amendment free speech argument and a religious exercise argument. And it's not dealing with a situation where there's an employer accommodation, but it is dealing with this broader macro question, are we going to give religious people the same sort of protection that we offer to other people, other business owners all the time? And protect their ability to do that through free speech protections or otherwise. And so, for example, in Masterpiece, it is true that there were multiple bakeries in Colorado who declined to bake a cake with a Bible-themed message condemning homosexuality because they disagreed with that message. And Colorado, rightly, I think, protected their ability to, as business owners, abstain from promoting a message or an event that was something that they disagreed with. And Colorado did that even if it was hurtful or offensive to the religious customer who was asking for that cake to be told, turned down, and to be told by those bakeries in Colorado, one of them that was owned by gay owners, that they disagreed with the Bible-themed message and didn't want to have to create that. And so in a similar way, Jack Phillips, the owner of Masterpiece Bake Shop, is saying, I'm willing to serve any sort of customer any of the baked goods off my shelf and to design a number of different goods for them, whether it's a birthday cake or all sorts of other events, but I can't design a cake that is going to be promoting celebration of a religious ceremony that goes against my religious beliefs. And so the question in that case constitutionally is, are we going to give Jack the same sorts of protection that the other Colorado bakeries received? More broadly, are we going to give Jack the same sorts of protection that the Seattle coffee shop owner enjoyed when he decided he didn't want to have people promoting pro-life messages be in his shop? Or the hairstylist who didn't want to continue styling the hair of a governor because of a position that the governor took not supportive of LGBT rights, or Chipotle refusing to cater the Boy Scouts because of their policy at the time about gay Scout leaders. And in other contexts, CEOs like the owner of Starbucks, for example, have talked about the importance of businesses being able to make moral decisions and specifically be able to make decisions that aren't just based on their bottom line, to make decisions that are promoting sort of the American ideal that they believe in. And the question in Masterpiece is whether Jack's going to be given that same protection, either under free speech principles or religious exercise principles, too.
Again, to ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. While we wait for our next question, I'll ask one of my own. Are there any similar cases going on in the federal circuits?
Similar to the Myrick case or similar to the Masterpiece case?
To Myrick.
I'm not aware of any currently pending cases that are ongoing right now that are similar to Myrick. This is the first victory for an individual of faith in this area, and it's a landmark victory in that way because it shows that we can protect faith of government workers even in the fraught context of religious liberty and LGBT rights, and we can do so in a way that protects the dignity of LGBT individuals as well.
And do you think the decision would have been different if the case wasn't heard in an EEOC court? Did that affect it at all? Rather than a circuit court or a district court?
Right. It would have been appealed to a federal circuit court, for example. It was an option if the state had wanted to continue fighting this. But because there were some findings that the federal judge made in this case that really showed the double standard that the state was employing and the way that an accommodation would have been so easy, the state, I think, rightly decided that this was not a case worth fighting or a case that they had a good chance of winning if it had gone up to a federal circuit. And so they entered into the settlement, making it a final resolution at this level.
I'll make a final call for questions. Again, to ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. Let's go to that next caller.
Good afternoon. My name is Bob Russ. I'm in Eastern Pennsylvania. I'm just wondering if Attorney Barclay has any, can tell us anything about what the Supreme Court may be considering that would go against the baker in this particular case? What rationale would they have for allowing the discrimination to take place?
Well, there were certainly some questions from the Supreme Court in oral argument about whether or not a cake is expressive or not, and where you draw the line if something is expressive or not. If the court were to rule that a cake isn't speech or expression because it just had symbols on it or doesn't have writing, I think that would potentially result in a dangerous ruling, for example, where you could have a baker who supports Black Lives Matter be asked by the White Aryans Nation Church to bake a Confederate flag-themed cake for an event by the White Aryans Nation Church. So it is possible that the Supreme Court could rule that what Jack Phillips was doing wasn't expressive, but I think that would have dangerous implications for other business owners and their ability to choose what they're going to support or not. But even if the court rules that the cake is not expressive, there's the additional question they have to address of whether or not there's still a free exercise protection for Jack under the free exercise clause of the First Amendment. And that one, I think, is also going to be difficult for the Supreme Court to get around the court noted that there were some comments by the Colorado commissioners below that seemed pretty hostile to religion. There was one comment that described Jack's religious beliefs as a despicable piece of rhetoric. And Justice Kennedy seemed troubled by that sort of hostility towards religion. And, of course, the Free Exercise Clause looks at whether or not there's a double standard where you're offering protections to some people, like the bakers in Colorado who wanted to avoid baking a cake, but you wouldn't offer that same protection to a religious individual. So it's possible that in this case, the court, if they're worried about line drawings related to free speech protections, they could still uphold a protection for Jack in what some court watchers think of as a more narrow way by making that ruling under the Free Exercise Clause.
Thank you very much.
Again, to ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. Do you think that cases like this signal an equilibrium or growing consensus on religious liberty rights in the public square, or do you think opinions are still deeply divided?
There's certainly lots of different opinions about these issues. Americans have long disagreed about sex, religion, and politics. That's nothing new. I don't think that's going to change anytime in the near future. But I do think that there is a strong belief that is shared widely by many people across political spectrum and different ideologies, and that is that often even if we do disagree with each other about sex, religion, and politics, we still agree that others should have the right to have those different beliefs, that we understand that that's part of living in a really pluralistic, diverse society, and to live alongside our neighbors with different viewpoints, we have to be willing to protect the rights of those with whom we disagree. The alternative is to give the government the power to choose one right view, one orthodoxy on a lot of these really hot topics, and then punish those who disagree. That's really what's at stake in a lot of these cases. And I think that's why many Americans, even those who support same-sex marriage, even advocate gay rights defenders like Professor Doug Laycock, who absolutely support the rights of LGBT individuals, are strongly also supporting the rights of people like Jack Phillips and Masterpiece Cake Shop, because they're saying we can have a society where we protect LGBT rights and where we protect the right of others who have good faith disagreements about sexuality and marriage and some of those other issues, and we can find a way to protect both and to protect dignity of people on both sides.
Not seeing any questions, would you like to make some closing remarks?
I think Gail's case is a good reminder that oftentimes, maybe on the surface, LGBT rights and religious liberty may look like they're locked in a zero-sum game, and that one can only be protected at the expense of the other. But I think that when individuals or groups are willing to have even just an ounce of good faith and a desire to try and find reasonable solutions, and they dig down and they do the work to do so, those solutions are often readily available, and they're so needed in our society right now. And that's what the federal judge in Gail's case was really saying, is that the state had to do that work. The state had to try and explore and find those sorts of solutions. And the state's refusal to do so is the reason that the state violated our Civil Rights Act. But I'm optimistic that cases like Gail's and other cases coming up the pipeline remind us of the benefit of trying to find those solutions, not just in courts of law, but in our own communities, in our homes, and to try and find ways to protect dignity of both parties and have a country where even if we disagree deeply, we can respect each other and still live and let live, live alongside each other, break bread together as neighbors and citizens who protect each other's rights.
On behalf of the Federalist Society, I want to thank our expert for the benefit of her valuable time and expertise today. We welcome listener feedback by email at info@fedsoc.org. Thank you all for joining us. We are adjourned.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this practice group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at fedsoc.org/multimedia.